Here's one that we can all identify with. You go to McDonald's and you ask for a cup of coffee. You ask for it extra hot. You drive off with a cup of coffee. You spill the cup of coffee by your own negligence. The coffee burns you. You sue McDonald's. Why? Because it's not your fault. We live in a society where it's easy to blame other people and other things for the ills and the problems of our life.
Welcome to Anchored in Jesus, the teaching ministry of Dr. William R. Glaze, founder of the Pittsburgh Institute of Biblical Studies, author, and senior pastor of Bethany Baptist Church. This is Sonia Hall thanking you for joining us today for the conclusion of The Fence of Responsibility. So let's join Dr. Glaze for the conclusion of The Fence of Responsibility.
As soon as he starts talking that people want to, what do they want to do? They want to jump out of the pie and start talking about who? The other person. Why? Because they refuse to accept their part of the responsibility. They refuse to look at where they have put the ingredients in the pie. So when we look at that, what happens in relationships? People get angry, people are impatient, people are rude, people are proud and stubborn, people nag, people are critical, they are bitter and unforgiving, and people are inconsiderate. So when you sit down and you look at a broken relationship, draw the pie, and then cut out your slice of the pie. That opens our eyes. You can't be irresponsible anymore. Because I have to look in there somewhere and see that I have put the ingredients in this pie. So when I go back and I look at all these reasons why people are irresponsible or they don't take responsibility, I have to look and say, are they really being realistic? That anytime a relationship breaks down, that is it really just one person? 99.9% of the time, both people contribute. So we have to be honest, and we have to be willing, and we have to carve out our slice of the responsibility. Now, he went on to talk about, and this is what really just kind of got in my spirit, in my mind. He began to talk about the problem with irresponsibility. See, there's a whole lot of irresponsible people in the world. And these irresponsible people are not willing to take their share of the blame. And so, therefore, that's why we have a lot of problems that we do. Because people don't own up. Again, go back to court. The reason that people take each other to court is because somebody has not owned up to their responsibility. And that's why you get, sometimes I wonder, you got all these court shows, Judge Mathis, Judge Judy, People's Court, Divorce Court, Fraternity Court. You got all these court shows. And you know the question that comes to my mind? Where do they get all these people from? Are there that many problems in the world that people would be willing to come and air their business on television? But it all boils down to irresponsibility. So he talked about the problems with irresponsibility. And the first one that he brought out, and the reason that people are irresponsible, is because irresponsibility is rewarded. He said that we live in a country, a society, where being irresponsible is rewarded. That not only is irresponsibility rewarded, but you can enjoy the privileges of being irresponsible. People have found a way to profit off of irresponsibility. Now I heard the term, I'm gonna throw it out there, you can go look it up. It's called the underground economy. Google that, not now, Google that. Underground economy. People are profiting off of their irresponsibility. Irresponsibility is repeated. When you reward irresponsibility, what do people do? They repeat it. You keep doing it. If irresponsibility is repeated, is rewarded, then it's repeated. He went on to say that irresponsibility is contagious. Why is that? Because people say, why should I work extra hard? Why should I pay my own way? Why should I clean up my own mess? Why should I go without when other people have found a way of getting by being irresponsible? So why should, so it's contagious. So you know what? I'm not going to be responsible because these folk are irresponsible. They're getting rewarded. I'm going to find out how to get me a little something-something. So it's contagious. And then the final thing that he says is that it's neutral. And I'm going to read this because this was powerful. He said, anytime an individual acts irresponsibly, somebody has to come along and shoulder the burden of their irresponsibility. Irresponsibility is not a neutral thing. It's not something that just sits on the floor and everybody leaves it there. Whenever someone is irresponsible, someone or some group of people have to come along and clean up the mess. It must be handled by someone. So in essence, when I act irresponsibly, I am expecting other people who aren't responsible to carry the burden of my mess and chaos that I have created. Irresponsibility is not neutral. And then he gave an example. And I'm going to move. I see some of y'all getting a little uncomfortable, so I'm going to move on. He said when his kids were growing up that, and they left their clothes on the floor, that he would come and he would call them and he would say, you left a mess on the floor. And they would say, okay, he said, no, I don't want you to pick it up. I don't want you to pick it up. And they said, but Dad, that's mine. He said, no, don't pick it up. He said, I am going to pick up your mess. Because you see, when somebody is irresponsible, somebody has to come along and pick it up. So you don't pick up the clothes, I'm going to pick them up just to prove. I said, wow, man, that was deep, man. Go ahead, Andy Stanley, with your bad self. And so when we think about it, we just live in a society, we live in a culture where irresponsibility just runs rampant. As we look at irresponsibility, we see that one of the key things with irresponsibility is blame shifting, that we blame other people. We all know the story of Adam and Eve and how that God held Adam responsible for what happened in the garden. And instead of Adam taking responsibility, what did he do? He cast the blame off on his wife. He, in essence, we use the term today, what did he do? He threw his wife under the bus. This guy who, when God put him to sleep and created the woman out of his rib, and when he brought him out, now you might not see this in the King James, but in the Hebrew it comes out, that when Adam first saw Eve, he went like, wow. And he just was floored, and he was looking, and he was like, woo! In the connection that they had, and the love that they had for one another. They were the only two there. Their affection, there was nobody to draw attention away from, nobody there to take away from what they had between them. But this was, as the spinners would say, a mighty love that they had between them. As much as he loved this woman, as much as he loved this woman, when it came time to take responsibility, what did he do? He blame shifted. And he threw his wife under the bus. And husbands have been throwing their wives under the bus ever since. Blame shifted. He cast the blame on somebody else. Why? Because he didn't want to take responsibility for his action. One of my favorite comedians is Sinbad. And Sinbad was telling how that he was afraid of Dracula. And he said that if Dracula came after him, and he was with his lady. He said, and they both started running. He said if Dracula was getting close, that what he would do, he would trip his woman, let her fall on the ground, and say, there she is, go ahead and get her. That's what Adam did. He tripped his woman. He threw her on the ground. He let Dracula come and get her. Why? Because he did not want to accept responsibility. I heard a poem that talked about the fact that people don't want to accept responsibility. It said, I went into a psychiatrist to be psychoanalyzed to find out why I killed my cat and blackened my husband's eyes. He laid me on a beautiful couch to see what he could find. And here is what he dredged up in my subconscious mind. When I was one, my mommy hid my dolly in the trunk, so it naturally follows that I'm always drunk. When I was two, I saw my father kiss the maid one day, and now I suffer from kleptomania. At three, I felt the ambivalence of anger towards my brothers, and so it follows naturally I poison all my lovers. But now I am happy, and I learned the lesson that has been taught, that everything that is wrong with me is somebody else's fault. See, when we look at the fact that we don't want to be responsible, we start to blame shift, and we blame other people. Chuck Swindoll gives a powerful statement about blame shifting. He says that blame shifting never amounts in anything positive. Blame never affirms, it assaults. Blame never restores, it wounds. Blame never solves, it complicates. Blame never unites, it separates. Blame never smiles, it frowns. Blame never forgives, it rejects. Blame never forgets, it remembers. Blame never builds, it destroys. And then Swindoll concludes, let's admit it, not until we stop blaming will we start enjoying health and happiness again. Blame backfires, hurting us more than the object of our resentment. And so we come to this point that we have to begin to accept responsibility. And as I've been doing throughout the time of this series that we've had together, giving a prescription on what it takes to deal with the problem, we want to look at three things. I call these AAA: acknowledge, apologize, and accept. That if we begin to do more of this and less blame shifting, then we will find ourselves becoming responsible for our actions. The first thing that we have to do is admit or acknowledge the fact that we're wrong. You will never take responsibility for your actions until you acknowledge the fact that you've done something wrong. Even if the other person blames and shoulders the most of the problem for the break in the relationship, that until we acknowledge that in some way that we have contributed to this, then we're not going to move ahead. One of the most difficult things to do is to lead a person to Christ that don't believe they need to be saved. If they got their own way to salvation, if they figured this thing out on their own, you can't lead them to Christ. Why? Because they don't know that they need Christ. And so if you're going to straighten out, if you're going to become responsible, the first thing that you have to do is acknowledge the fact that there has been an offense committed, that there has been a wrong that has taken place. Look at Psalm 51. Psalm 51, when David committed sin with Bathsheba, he walked out on his porch one afternoon when he should have been out to war, and he saw a woman taking a bath. He lusted in her heart, in his heart, after her. He called her to his quarters, had sex with her, and they had a baby. Not only that, but he tried to get the husband to think that it was his baby. So he called the husband back off the front line, tried to get the husband to go sleep with his wife. Man, that sounds like a modern-day soap opera, don't it? tried to get the husband to go sleep with his wife so that everybody would think that it was his baby. But the man was, he loved David so much, he was dedicated to David so much, he said, how can I go sleep with my wife when the rest of the men of Israel are out to war? He said, I will not do such a thing. So David sent him back to the front lines with his own death notice. And he said that whenever the battle gets hot, have the rest of the men pull back from the front line and let them kill Uriah. And that's exactly what happened. And Uriah was killed. And for some time, I'm going to say almost at least a year, David, at least publicly anyways, never acknowledged the fact that he did wrong. Never acknowledged it until a prophet came one day and gave him the story about a man who ripped another guy off for a lamb. And then finally David saw what he had done. By that time, David's baby was already born. So we're looking at probably, what, at least a year that David went without acknowledging it. But when he saw the wrong that he did, look what he cries out in Psalm 51, verse 3. For I acknowledge my transgressions, and my sin is ever before me. Against thee and thee only have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight, that thou mightest be justified when thou speakest and clear when thou judgest. What was the first thing that David did? He acknowledged the fact that he had done wrong. He admitted that he did wrong. And if we are going to be responsible people, that we have to accept responsibility. We can't blame it all, throw it off on this man or this race or that race. You know, the first thing that we got to do is begin to accept responsibility for ourselves. And I guarantee you that there have been some injustices in society. There have been some misbehaving in political places. But the bottom line is that no matter what happens up there, you are responsible for what happens right here. And you are responsible for your life. And you are responsible for what goes on. And when you stand before God, he's going to judge the people that abused you. He's going to judge the people that took advantage of you. But God is going to hold you accountable for what you did with what he gave you. And so the first thing that we have to do is that we have to step up to the plate and we have to acknowledge any wrongdoing that we have done. The second thing, if we're going to become responsible people, that we have to apologize to the other party. If you'll put up that next slide. And this is Matthew 5:23. I don't know if you can see it, but it basically gives us, I call them the R's, the reverence, remembrance, return, reconciliation, and resolution. What is the reverence? That if you reverence God and you bring your gift to the altar, this referred to in the Old Testament, when somebody would bring their gift to the altar, they were reverencing God. They were honoring God in their heart. They had a relationship with God. They wanted to please God. They wanted to worship God. That was the reverence. What was the remembrance? That when you come to the altar with your sacrifice and you remember that you have something against somebody else, that you should stop in the middle of what you're doing and you should leave your gift, and that you should return to the brother or sister that you have this issue with. That's the reconciliation. And it says, be reconciled to thy brother. And we talked about the process. I got a whole sermon on the process of reconciliation. So if you don't know how to reconcile, I broke it down in detail in that sermon. I would suggest that you get that sermon on reconciliation. He said, go and be reconciled to your brother. And the resolution, once you have resolved that, then you can come and you can offer your gift on the altar. What is that verse saying right there? That verse is basically saying that you need to go apologize. That if you remember that your brother has something against you, you remember, and you know what? God, if you pray and if you are honest, God will convict your heart. God will lay on your heart if you've done something wrong. And then a lot of times we do one or two things. We either, when God convicts us, we just throw it off because we don't want to deal with it and we don't want to hear it. Or we don't even put ourselves in a position where we're going to hear that we're wrong. You know, I'm not going to pick up the Bible. I'm not going to go to church. Why? Because I might see something I don't like. I might be challenged to do something I don't want to do. He says, be reconciled. And then the last thing is that we have to accept the consequences. If you go back to the previous slide, we have to accept the consequences. And the verse I have there is Proverbs 14 and verse 12, but I'm going to change that, and I'm just going to tell you the story, and we'll read the bottom line. If you'll write this verse down, 2 Samuel chapter 12, verses 13 through 23. 2 Samuel chapter 12, verses 13 through 23. And this is when David has been confronted by Nathan the prophet, and as he is confronted, Nathan tells him, David, do you know that God was getting ready to kill you? God was getting ready to take your life had you not repented. And so David repents, and then it comes down to the fact that he's fasting and asking God to keep his baby alive, to not allow his baby to die, to heal his baby. And God doesn't heal David's baby. And look what it says in verse 23 after the baby died. In verse 23, David said, but now he is dead. Why should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me. What did David do? He accepted the consequences. And you know what? When we are irresponsible, things happen. When we are irresponsible, there sometimes are consequences that take place that are irrevocable. It's like I said before. We can reconcile, but some things are not going to be restored. And so we need to accept if we're going to be responsible. See, again, what do people want to do? They want to put it off on somebody else. That they, well, you know, this person needs to pay for this. This person needs to pay for it. No, no, you need to accept the consequences of your action. That's a responsible person. A responsible person says, yeah, I did wrong. Yeah, I messed up. And you know what? Whatever the consequences of that are, I'm willing to accept the consequences of that. And that's how you become a responsible individual. Acknowledge the wrong, apologize to the other party, and accept the consequences. As I close today, I heard the story about a fishing village, and they had a terrible flood, and this flood was ravaging the whole town. There was a boy that got caught up in the waters, and a man tied a rope around himself and jumped in to the water, and he swam, and he got the little boy with the rapids raging. And he was holding the little boy in his arm, and he said, pull the rope, pull the rope. And all the people that were standing around, nobody took the responsibility to grab a hold of the rope. And when he jumped in, the rope went in the water too. And I just want to say that when we are irresponsible, tragic things happen. People lose their lives. Problems arise. Why? Because the rope is laying there and nobody's reaching down to grab a hold of the rope. We can all look and say, well, I thought he grabbed the rope. I thought she grabbed the rope. I ain't grabbing the rope. But when we don't take the rope of responsibility, I guarantee it, bad things happen. When you are irresponsible, bad things happen. And this even goes down to relationships.
Thank you for joining us today on Anchored in Jesus. Tune in next time for the first half of Deep Thoughts on a Holy Night, Joseph. If you would like to request an audio copy of today's message, The Fence of Responsibility, you can contact us at anchoredinjesus.org and request The Fence of Responsibility. That's anchoredinjesus.org and request The Fence of Responsibility. Or call us at 877-831-5060. Also, Dr. William R. Glaze's book, Rebuilding the Fences of Broken Relationships, is made available by contacting us at anchoredinjesus.org. When you visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, you can view many of the other teachings by Dr. Glaze. Dr. Glaze is the author of 8 books. For more information about these resources and how to order, Visit anchoredinjesus.org or call 877-831-5060. We also invite you to like us on Facebook at Anchored in Jesus Ministries. If you would like to make a financial contribution, please visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, or send it to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania 15206. Once again, that website is anchoredinjesus.org, or you can send your financial contribution to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania 15206. It's through your prayers and gifts that we remain on the air. Our title, Anchored in Jesus, comes from Hebrews chapter 6, verse 19, which lets us know that Jesus is our high priest and an anchor for the soul. Now, for Dr. Glaze and our volunteer staff, I'm Sonia Hall, reminding you, you don't have to be tossed in the storms of life. Your soul can be anchored in the Lord.